The headlines: resistance groups call on the Palestinian Authority to withdraw from the planned talks with Israel and Jordan, calling it a U.S. plot against Palestinian aspirations. Thousands of protesters take to the streets in Berlin and London to call for an end to Western weapons supply to Ukraine. And a rare winter storm sweeps across the state of California, causing flooding and mass power outages. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Jordan will be hosting a meeting between Palestinian Authority and Israeli officials later on Sunday amid heightened tensions in the occupied territories. Jordanian officials say representatives from regional parties and the U.S. will also attend the meeting in the Red Sea port of Aqaba. The Palestinian Authority says its delegation will use the meeting to call for a peace deal and an end to Israeli occupation of the West Bank. However, Palestinian resistance groups, including Hamas, have called on the Palestinian Authority to withdraw from the meeting. They say it is a U.S. plot against Palestinian aspirations. Israel has intensified its crackdown against Palestinians over the past months. The violence has killed at least 62 people only this year. Meanwhile, thousands of people have hit the streets of Tel Aviv for the eighth straight week to denounce judicial reforms proposed by the new far-right Israeli cabinet. The protesters gathered in front of the Knesset waving flags and placards that read, "Crime Minister." The demonstration came days after Israeli MPs took a step towards approving the controversial reforms. The plan has triggered protests, with people hitting the streets for weeks to express their anger at what they call a fascist cabinet. They believe the proposed overhaul would fatally undermine checks and balances. If approved, the law would limit the powers of the top court to overturn cabinet's decisions. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has developed a new cruise missile with a range of over 1,600 kilometers.
Our long-range cruise missile, with 1,650 kilometers of range, has been added to the Islamic Republic's missile arsenal. It's flying at an altitude of approximately 40 to 50 meters from the ground. It's a phenomenon that needs no further explanation, considering its 1,650 kilometer range.
General Hajizadeh said the missile is named after the city of Pave in western Iranian province of Kermanshah to honor the martyrs in that region in the 1980s. The commander of the IRGC's aerospace force also said Iran now possesses hypersonic missiles, which by no means are intercepted.
This missile system is capable of striking any target we want, and naturally our first targets will be the missile defense systems. And with our other technologies such as cruise missiles and drones and other capabilities, they cannot compete with us in any way.
General Hajizadeh also said Iran is now able to hit American ships at a distance of 2,000 kilometers. Iran has made quick advancements in its missile program in recent years. The Islamic Republic, however, has repeatedly stressed that its missile program is purely defensive and meant for deterrence. Iraq's defense minister has met with his Iranian counterpart in Tehran. The two sides have agreed to expand bilateral cooperation. In the meantime, Iran has reiterated that it is ready to share its experiences to help boost its defense capabilities. Iran's defense minister salutes during an official ceremony to welcome his Iraqi counterpart. Thabit Mohammad Said al-Abbasi visited Tehran as Iran and Iraq are eyeing regional security and stability through stronger defense cooperation, with both sides emphasizing border security.
We fully support a united and stable Iraq. We will help Iraq achieve stability and security that will lead to the development of the country, and we are prepared to help Iraq in this regard. Based on our historical and geopolitical ties, we consider Iraq's security our own security.
The Iranian defense minister also emphasized that the Islamic Republic will not allow its borders to be threatened. He described the presence of extra-regional forces and the Zionist regime in particular as the main threats, not just to Iraq itself, but also to regional security. Meanwhile, the Iraqi defense minister voiced Baghdad's readiness in strengthening ties with Tehran.
The main objective of this visit is to boost bilateral relations between Iran and Iraq. On top of the agenda is the war that Iraq is fighting against terrorism. Both Iran and Iraq are facing national security challenges. Stronger defense relations can alleviate the situation, and in our meeting, we discussed this issue.
Tehran has had good and high-level relations with neighboring countries, particularly Iraq, in the past years, reiterating that international ties and the improvement of ties with neighbors are among the most important arenas of Iran's foreign policy. Iran has made great achievements with regards to its defense capabilities and has reached a level where it is now self-sufficient. The defense minister reiterated that the Islamic Republic is prepared to share its valuable experiences with the Iraqi side. Gizu Misha Ahmadi, Tehran. Moving on to Europe, protesters in the German capital Berlin have demonstrated against supplying Ukraine with weapons for the war with Russia. The protesters called on the German government to stop the escalation and instead engage in negotiations with Moscow. The protests were held a day after the one-year anniversary of the war. Security was very tight as police mobilized 1,400 officers to keep the peace and to enforce bans on Russian and Soviet flags. Similar protests were also held in the British capital, London.
Stop the war! Stop the war!
Thousands of kilometers away from the front lines of the Russia-Ukraine war, an appeal for peace from central London.
But today's protest means that while there may be consensus at the official political level here in Britain and other European countries, anti-war sentiment among ordinary people is on the rise.
Years before the conflict began, anti-war campaigners had warned of the consequences of a NATO expansion to countries that share borders with Russia. Their warnings were ignored.
The call for it to go on and on, which is what all the governments are talking about now, is really a call for more of this and for an escalation of the war with the possible threat of nuclear war.
Но нигде.
That threat became more real last week after Russian President Vladimir Putin announced his country was halting its participation in a nuclear arms reduction treaty with the U.S. A response to U.S.-led NATO nations sending tanks and other armaments to Ukraine. Wars come at a cost, and it's not just the Ukrainians and the Russians impacted by this one. The ripple effects of what's happening on the battlefield have already washed up on European shores.
We are seeing an impact on fuel bills. We are seeing an impact on food prices. But I think also there is a growing cynicism that there's no money to pay nurses a decent pay rise. There's no money for the National Health Service, but the British government seems to have endless coffers of money to provide arms for Ukraine.
After a year of war that's seen tens of thousands killed, tens of millions displaced, and entire cities destroyed, will this renewed call for peace make a difference? Saeed Pourreza, London.
The European Union slaps a new round of hefty sanctions on Russia, vowing to increase pressure on Moscow until Ukraine is liberated. EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell said the latest bans target Russia's banking sector and its access to technology used for military purposes. Other bans include tighter export restrictions on entities that support Russia's military-industrial complex. The European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen also said the sanctions are designed to deplete Russia's war arsenal and weaken its economy. The 10th round of sanctions were adopted on the first anniversary of the war in Ukraine. The U.S. and its allies have imposed a host of sanctions on Russia since the war began last February. Moscow has repeatedly said the sanctions have backfired and that Western countries have been hit worse by the bans. Thousands of people have taken to the streets of the Portuguese capital, Lisbon, to demand better living conditions amid the ongoing cost of living crisis. A protest was organized by Portugal's Fair Life movement, which was created by people who live in Lisbon's poorer outskirts. The demonstrators chanted slogans demanding higher wages, a cap on the price of essential goods, and government action on housing. The demonstration came 2 weeks after tens of thousands of Portuguese teachers staged mass protests in Lisbon to demand higher wages and better working conditions. Portugal is one of Western Europe's poorest countries, which is struggling with a decades-high inflation. And vote counting begins in Nigeria's presidential and parliamentary elections. More than 90 million people were registered to vote in Africa's most populous nation. Three candidates are seen as frontrunners to succeed President Muhammadu Buhari. Bola Tinubu and Atiku Abubakar represent the two dominant parties, but a surprise third candidate is from the Labour Party, Peter Obi. Ballot counting is expected to take several days, while a runoff election has been predicted. The contested poll was held simultaneously with the country's parliamentary elections. Nigerian elections have often been marred by violence due to political and ethnic tensions. For more on that, we're joined by our correspondent, Danjuma Abdullahi, live from Abuja. Danjuma, tell us more about the situation there and the vote counting.
Yeah, the vote counting has continued, but I think also beyond that, due to late arrival of voting materials and violence in some states of Nigeria's 36 states, the Independent National Electoral Commission has asked its officials to continue the voting process through today in 16 of Nigeria's 36 states so that people will not be disenfranchised. The Collation Center, which is located at the International Conference Center, about 2 kilometers from where we are right now on the Abuja Street, is expected to be open at 12 noon Nigerian time. That's about 2 hours from now, and that is when actual voting, collation of material is expected to start. Results from many states of Nigeria are expected to be sent in and collated. This election is very important because there are so many issues, so many challenges that are bothering Nigerians, and so they are expecting to choose a new leader that is expected to steer the affairs of Nigerians and solve many of these challenges. In about 2 hours from now, we are expected at the International Conference Center where we will witness the filing in and collation of results in this election.
Danjuma, you did mention that in some parts there have been some irregularities, reports of irregularities or reports of any kind of scuffles between those who have taken part in the elections. Are you predicting this to escalate?
No, I am not predicting that it will escalate because I believe that we have seen the worst of it. This violence and these irregularities are in some states. They are not significant to affect or say and predict that there will be more violence. I don't think there will be violence, but you never know with Nigerian elections. They are very volatile periods every time in 2003, 2007, 2015, 2019. There were predictions of violence, but we never had violence. So this is not different from those times when tension is high and violence is predicted, but Nigerians are very resilient people and usually get over it, everything. Now, let me just say that the elections were relatively peaceful. relatively peaceful in many of the areas, but for some isolated areas. So I don't think it is wise to say that I will be predicting more violence.
Thank you very much. We'll be in touch with our correspondent, Danjuma Abdullahi from Abuja, for more updates regarding the elections in the most populous African country. More than 90 million people were expected to take part in these elections. Moving on to the United States, a rare winter storm has swept the U.S. state of California, causing flooding and mass power outages, as well as the closure of many routes. The storm has brought snow to higher elevations while dumping rain and hail in the flatlands. More than 120,000 people, mostly in the Los Angeles area, are without electricity. Interstate 5, the largest highway leading north out of the city, has been closed. The storm is one of the strongest to hit the state in years. The U.S. National Weather Service says a massive low-pressure system driven from the Arctic was responsible for this unusual condition. North Korea has fired a number of missiles once again. Even though these missile tests have become a common occurrence this time around, it may be different. First off, it is reported that these are missiles that would carry nuclear warheads. Since last year, North Korea has increased the number of its missile tests, which could be a warning sign for U.S. and its allies in the region. North Korea first tested a long-range cruise missile system in September 2021 and has since described those weapons as strategic, implying that they are being developed with the intent to arm them with nuclear warheads. The U.S. has reacted by holding tabletop nuclear drills to simulate a drill on attacking North Korea. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell about yourself.
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of life.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 26, 2023. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, letters, and messages from around the world. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And congratulations, everyone, on the auspicious birth anniversary of the fourth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, the great grandson of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Sajjad, peace upon him. As for your information, dear listeners, among the immortal legacies of Imam Sajjad, the fourth Imam, is the Risalatul Huquq, or the Treatise of Rights, that is more perfect than the United Nations Charter of Human Rights, and also the Sahifatul Sajjadiyya, which is a manual of supplications to God in highly eloquent words that contain every topic under the sun, including scientific issues and the weight of light, something which modern science is still beginning to discover. Congratulations, everyone. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back, everyone. This is Listeners Special, and here we've received reception reports from around the world, from Konstantin Barsenko from Russia, from Mahfuzur Rahman from Bangladesh, and Freddie Irigoyen from Uruguay. So, Konstantin, Mahfuzur Rahman, and Freddie, thank you very much for sending us these reception reports. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And we've received many emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here, and later during the program, I will read these emails. From Bangladesh, we've received an email from Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar, one of our old and regular listeners. From Switzerland, we've received an email from David Favre. From Russia, we've received an email from Konstantin Borsenkov. Again, from Bangladesh, we have another email from MD Jahangir Alam. And the last, but not the least, is an email from Ralph Ladouche from Germany. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. As I said, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh has sent us an email. Let's see what he says. Hello, dear IRIB English Radio. At first, take my salam from Bangladesh. I offer my greetings to the IRIB English Radio and all the staff. Best wishes for you for the upcoming season. I'm glad to see that IRIB English Radio regularly replies listeners and asks them for their constructive opinions about its programs, making listeners more and more interested in listening to IRIB English Radio's programs and writing letters. As you know, I am a devoted old listener of your radio. Due to the outbreak of coronavirus, writing to you unfortunately stopped, but listening to your radio has not. Keep up the good work, and thank you for your informative radio. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran and from IRIB English Radio staff, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, and please accept our warm appreciations to you for sending us such a valuable and great email. As you may know, we know it as our task to reply all our listeners around the world and, of course, ask their opinions about our programs. So this way we can improve the quality of our programs. Thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh. Anyway, we wish you all the best. And, of course, we're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Please accept our EQSL as verification. Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, thank you again. And from Switzerland, we've received an email from David Favre. David says, hello, here is a new report from Switzerland of your radio broadcast. Thank you for the quality of your programs. It changes our perception about Iran and what is represented to us by our corrupt European media. It's a pleasure to listen to you. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, David Favre from Switzerland. Warm greetings to you, and please accept our gratitudes for letting us know your views about our programs. Yes, as you said, when the Western media tries to tarnish the image of beautiful Iran, the best means to know about Iran is referring to the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting, IRIB, especially your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. Anyway, thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, David Favre from Switzerland. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Please accept our EQSL as verification. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. So let's see what Konstantin Barsenko from Russia, one of our old and regular listeners, says. Dear staff at IRIB English Radio, I'm sending this reception report from Russia. I'm glad that your signals are being received and heard here in St. Petersburg. Kindly send me a verification card and other materials if possible. Kind regards, Konstantin Barsenko. Salam, Konstantin, and greetings to you from Tehran, the capital city of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And thank you very much for sending this email to IRIB English Radio. We are also pleased to hear that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received and heard in St. Petersburg, Russia. Please accept our electronic QSL as verification, because sending any material at the time of pandemic is not possible. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Konstantin Barsenko from Russia. And as I said before, from Bangladesh, we've received another email, this time from MD Jahangir Alam. MD Jahangir Alam from Bangladesh says, I am a regular and old audience of IRIB English Radio. I listen to your English service radio regularly and visit your website. I like your website as it is quite informative for me. I request to send me some promotional materials, such as postcards, stamps, etc. I will send you more reception reports in coming days. Thank you. Salam and greetings to you, and appreciations to you for sending us this email, MD Jahangir Alam, one of our old and regular listeners from Bangladesh. It's good to hear that you liked our programs as well as our website. So please accept our electronic QSL as verification, because sending any item, including postcards, stamps, etc., is not possible at the time of pandemic. So write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. Thank you again, MD Jahangir Alam from Bangladesh. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Last email in this edition of Listeners Special is an email from Germany, from Ralf Ladouche. Let's see what he says. Dear staff of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for the nice EQSL. I'm very happy for receiving that. I hope IRIB has stronger signals in the spring so we can enjoy your broadcast about politics, culture, landscape, architecture, sports, and more. Peaceful greetings from Germany. Salam and peaceful greetings from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Ralph Ladush from Germany. We appreciate you for sending this email to your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. So please accept our electronic QSL as verification. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. We wish you all the best, Ralph Ladouche from Germany. Okay, and here we come to the end of our program. But before saying goodbye to you, I do send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails from around the world, including Konstantin Barsenko from Russia, Mahfouz Rahman from Bangladesh, Freddy Irigoyen from Uruguay, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, David Favre from Switzerland, MD Jahangir Alam from Bangladesh, and Ralph Ladouche from Germany. Please keep in touch with us, with IRIB English Radio and your favorite program, Listeners Special. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Another missile test by North Korea. Four long-range cruise missiles were fired. A repeated scenario in response to U.S. joint war games. But is this time different? North Korea says it is. And the U.S. and its regional allies believe these missiles are being developed with the intent to arm them with nuclear warheads. In this edition of the program, we will look at why the U.S. is ramping up military pressure instead of diplomatic overtures on Pyongyang, and why it is content in doing that, knowing that North Korean missiles are capable of reaching the U.S. mainland. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. William Jones from the Executive Intelligence Review joins us from Leesburg. Jim Cavanaugh, a political analyst and blogger, joins us from New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I'd like to welcome you both. And William Jones, let me first start with you. First, get your reaction on the missiles that were fired. We're looking at four long-range cruise missiles. The question is whether this time is different based on how the capabilities, as it was reported, it said these were strategic cruise missiles designed to demonstrate its ability to conduct a nuclear counterattack, the keyword being counterattack here, I think. So do you deem this to be different than the previous missile launches?
Well, they're obviously improving their capabilities here. Reports have it that some of the missiles had made a oval and even a double-eight maneuver, showing that there is a greater maneuverability in these missiles. And, of course, they're reaching now to almost 2,000 kilometers. It's really a serious upgrade on the part of North Korea. And as the situation becomes more tense, directly after the maneuvers between Japan, South Korea, and the U.S., where the U.S. is doing significant upgrading in the Asia-Pacific region generally, aimed at North Korea, but also against China, this has created a great deal of tension where the North Koreans typically react by trying to show some of their capabilities. So I think There is an increased tension, there's increased capability that North Korea is now showing. But I think they're doing it in a context in which the tensions are being fed by U.S. policy in the region, which is increasingly more pushing the military rather than diplomatic solution to the problem, especially the problems with the DPRK.
So you're seeing a relationship there between the U.S. militaristic approach towards the region and the number of missiles or the times the missiles are being launched by North Korea?
Well, sure. I'm sure they are trying to utilize the maximum capability that they actually have there. I think this probably would not have occurred had the maneuvers not taken place. And the maneuvers, of course, are directly aimed at North Korea and have been criticized by North Korea prior to their being held in the area, so that it was a direct affront, I think they felt, to their attempt to maintain some kind of stability in the region. And they're reacting in the way that DPR always reacts.
Jim Cavanaugh, taking a look at the joint war games that was reported on this between the U.S. and South Korea, what was different about this is the fact that it was held in Washington, and basically they called it a tabletop exercise, which focused on, I guess, hypothetical scenarios of which North Korea would use nuclear weapons. And this was the first of its sort under the South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol. Is that what is that indicative of, or what does that show, that it was practiced in the U.S.?
I'm not sure that shows very much. The United States and South Korea have engaged in real military exercises, and that's what really annoys the North Koreans. It was a tabletop exercise in Washington. Of course, it's presented as a defensive exercise, but of course, even in the middle of a defensive exercise, they're going to plan for an invasion of North Korea, and North Korea knows that. So it's just the fact of the military cooperation and the tight military cooperation between South Korea and the United States going to Washington to do these exercises that has North Korea on edge. Look, everybody has to understand the history of the Korean War, which is kind of a forgotten war. That was a vicious war. The United States bombed North Korea to rubble, and they did that to prevent the unification of the peninsula under the forces that had fought the Japanese, which was a vicious Japanese occupation, and they did that in support of dictator or dictatorial regime in the South, which was composed of people who had collaborated with the Japanese. So the North Koreans have a history. They know, they have a historical memory of what it means for the United States to attack them. And that's why they're on edge all the time about this. So, you know, they're never going to stop being on edge about South Korean, United States military exercises and military cooperation and building up forces. And now the United States is building up Japan again to be, Joe Biden vowed to make Japan a potent military force. You know, again, the Japanese occupation of Korea was vicious. So the North Koreans have a historical memory that most people in the West, you know, the Korean War was glossed over in our history, and not for them. So they remember this, and they're going to be on edge about any American military exercises in the region. And they know what's going on with China and Taiwan. They know that even NATO has said, we've got to extend our reach into the Pacific. For some reason, the Pacific's part of the North Atlantic now. So there's a world situation, and in that area too, which is on the edge of conflict. Sure. And the Americans seem to be ready for conflict everywhere, and the North Koreans are aware of that.
There's a number of points that you raised there. Before we get to those points, however, I got to find out whether we can zoom in, William Jones, on who goes first. I'm trying to figure this out based on the way things are being reported. I mentioned what's happening in the States with this tabletop exercises, but this is an exercise held where the U.S. has announced that this is being done because of a potential nuclear strike by North Korea. Okay? They're looking at it that way. But the North's posturing is one of counterattack, meaning the U.S. or its allies would attack first. Is that accurate, reading it that way? And then there's this the fact that this does not read with how each stands in terms of attacking first, because each thinks the other is going to attack first.
Well, I think that's probably they would be wary of trying to start a nuclear conflict with the United States of their own volition, since they realize there's going to be perhaps a destruction of the nation. But they must have that capability. The reason they're going with the nuclear, becoming a nuclear power, effectively becoming a nuclear power, is that they feel that there's no other option open to them, that the opposition of the United States to the DPRK has been pretty straightforward through the years. The only exception was when President Trump successfully conducted negotiations with North Korea. People felt that it could be resolved diplomatically. But he was heavily criticized by the military-industrial complex while he was still president, while this was still ongoing. And then afterwards, of course, it's been totally rejected by the Biden administration, which feels that only a policy of showing force, peace through strength, can make any headway with regard to the DPR. And of course, that causes the major conflict. So that they see these as the nuclear capability that they have as a capability of being able to fend off and to respond to a possible nuclear attack from the West. But they do it by showing what they can do, because words are not going to convince anybody in the U.S. military-industrial complex that North Korea is not a threat, unless it shows that it is. And this is why they're very demonstrative in showing the weapons, rather than pursuing an aggressive policy. They want to show that we can respond, and you should do this with some respect, and you should try and come to some kind of a negotiated position with us. But at this point, it just has not succeeded because of the tremendous opposition to the United States of diplomacy in the DPRK-U.S. relationship.
So your guess, yes or no answer, if I may ask you that, William Jones, based on how you see it, if the situation continues this way, who would strike first?
Well, I do not think that the DPRK would make any first strike unless they were significantly threatened, or they felt that they were significantly threatened.
Well, they're feeling that right now, right?
Well, that's a real question. What is the the red line here. I mean, we
I tell you why they're feeling that. Let me just throw this stat out there. You have all the different missile tests that have happened. I'm going to address Jim Kavanaugh with this. Jim Kavanaugh, you have all these missile tests that North Korea has executed throughout the years, and then boom, 2020. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't use that word. Then you have the year 2022, and you have 72 of them. You had 22 missile tests in a span of 3 days. I think they're feeling threatened, or they're trying to say something. What do you think? What do you make of that? And this happening during the tenure of the current U.S. President Joe Biden?
Well, I think they are trying to demonstrate that if we get hit, we can impose serious damage on those who come after us. Look, they have certain problems with this. They did demonstrate some maneuvering capabilities with these cruise missiles, but they're still saying they're not yet capable of carrying nuclear weapons. The nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles they have are still liquid fuel missiles, which means they cannot be readied very quickly. The United States knows what's happening there. If North Korea were to start fueling up their ICBMs for an attack on someone, the United States would know it. I think so, probably, because they're liquid-fueled missiles. They require preparation. They can't be easily moved around.
Why not push for some kind of diplomatic move, something, a concession maybe of some kind? I'm guessing when you have missiles that can reach the U.S. mainland, and you say that maybe it could be capable of nuclear warhead, which the reading was by the U.S., that this is a rehearsal for developing nuclear warheads or putting nuclear warheads on it, you would guess there'd be some kind of diplomatic overture. Why isn't there one?
Well, I don't think, is the American administration ready to have a diplomatic overture with North Korea? Because it doesn't want to, they could put in, the Korean War is still going on. There's no peace treaty.
William Jones, what do you think?
The United States doesn't want to put it into
it. Let me get William Jones an answer on this. I'm sorry, Jim Kavanaugh. William Jones, why not?
Nobody can say for sure what the North Korean leadership's decisions will be in this. There's a lot of erratic movement. There's a lot of irrationalism. However, I think it's quite clear to them that if they would launch a strike against the United States, or even a strike against the United States facilities like in Guam, or perhaps even a strike against Japan, there would probably be an overwhelming reaction by U.S. nuclear forces, which would essentially end the North Korean state entirely. I think there's a certain understanding of that. And therefore, I think that they would be very reticent in starting that fight. But at the same time, they want to have the capability for a variety of reasons, for defense reasons, but also in terms of the political influence that being a nuclear power has in the world, which they also want to attain. But I think short of that, I think that if they launched an attack, it would be like a hand grenade that would be set off in North Korea itself, ending the North Korean state. I don't think the North Korean leadership, as mercurial as they are, is totally insane on this issue.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
All right. Well, you both have mentioned Japan on a couple of occasions now. So let's look at the military defense budget. It has been raised by 26%. That's the largest. What does that mean when it comes to what Jim Kavanaugh, what you said? You said that the U.S. is going to be pumping them up with arms. First of all, does Japan want to really get in on this with the U.S.? Is Japan acting on its own free will when it comes to the way that it stands with North Korea?
Well, I think there are political factions in Japan that want to rearm, that would like Japan to become a potent military force, quote unquote, in the region again. And they are de facto, the United States is promoting that and doing that, and they will do it. Now, it's not just in relation to Korea, but it's in relation to the region as a whole. And, you know, again, it is very, the peculiarity of the North Korean situation is unique. And again, Japan's relationship with Korea is terrible. And historically, you know, I don't think they're looking to reinvade and reoccupy Korea, but they are part of the American hegemonic domination of the Pacific region. And that's what they've thrown in their lot, like Europe has thrown in its lot, Western Europe and Eastern Europe with the United States and Europe. Japanese have thrown in their lot with the Americans, and we are going to be part of your hegemonic program in the Pacific region, which means we're going to support whatever you do in China and whatever you do in North Korea.
Okay, since you mentioned China, need to ask you about that, Bill Jones. What is the relationship between China and North Korea?
The relationship is still a friendly relationship. I don't think they have control over what North Koreans do. They have some influence, but I think they're also very wary and uncertain about where that's going. They would like to have a diplomatic resolution to the nuclear issue. They do want a nuclear-free Korean peninsula. They would like to see this moving forward, but they are not the chief players there. And as long as there is no indication from the United States to achieve such a solution, they have very little they can do. The issue of North Korea, of course, is also in one sense defensive for them, because the fact that the North Koreans are there as a former ally and still a very good friend, a lot of trade relations between the two, this is also preserves a buffer in many respects against Japan in particular, which is becoming more hostile, at least in the defense area, and even South Korea, which still maintains very good relationships with China, but is also being wooed by the United States to join in some kind of alliance, perhaps of a military character, aimed against China. So the China's position is that they would like to see a stable DPRK. They would like to see some kind of diplomatic solution to this. They would use their influence, I believe, if the United States were willing to move in that direction. But they do not want a military conflict on the Korean Peninsula, okay, because this would be very disastrous.
Jim Cavanaugh, I asked you about the number of missile launches that North Korea did in the year 2022, which was the most, 70, compared to the previous years. Now, there's one theory that says North Korea has upped its number of missile exercises because it's also wanting to send a message, but not of the direct kind, to the U.S., because it shows that what the U.S. intentions in the region are, aside from doing something about North Korea, is to target China. So with these exercises increasing to the point that it has, this may make the U.S. think twice about a military engagement in the region. Do you think that's the type of message that North Korea has sent to the U.S.? Does the U.S. see it that way?
Well, I'm sure the U.S. does see it that way, in the sense that the U.S. would like to know that there's no side action here that's going to come from North Korea if they get into a conflict with China, which very well might happen. And by the fact of doing all this test, and I think the main reason North Korea is doing all the testing is because it's doing a lot of development of new weapon systems, and it wants to make sure they work, and it wants to demonstrate to the world that they work. But the side effect of that is that it puts the United States in a position of having to think twice about. That's why the United States would like to get rid of this North Korean issue before they take on China in any way. I'm sure they'd like to do that, like they want to get rid of Syria and Iran, you know, Syria and Libya before they take on Iran. So there's a there's a lot of things going on in that respect. But, you know, the main reason the North Koreans are doing it, I think, is because they want to develop their systems, and they need to develop their systems, which aren't completely developed. And the United States does need to worry, at least, you know, what we have to take account if we're going to have military action with China. Will the North Koreans come in, and will their missiles be part of what the package that we have to deal with in such a conflict?
All right. A final question. Unfortunately, I have so many, but final question, Bill Jones, goes to you. This is an odd request, to say the least, when the U.S. holds China responsible for North Korea's multiple missile launches. It's even asked China and Russia to pressure North Korea to stop. I mean, really? Do you think that the U.S. even... Well, I mean, hey, you got to give it to the U.S. You know, they're asking what they cite as a number one and two national security threats to please do us a favor and stop North Korea from launching these missiles. How do you view that U.S. request from both China and Russia? In under a minute, please.
Well, why would they help the United States in any sense in this issue, when Russia, of course, is under attack by the United States, and where China has been a target of hostility from the U.S., in which the Taiwan issue is now being played with? It's not a situation in which you have a whole lot of trust between these countries.
Okay.
In other circumstances, perhaps there would be cooperation if
you're
working towards like a security architecture in the Asia Pacific. They would work together. But to the extent that the U.S. has named Russia an enemy and also China as an enemy, you're not going to get too many favors out of them.
Indeed. Thank you very much for that. William Jones, Executive Intelligence Review from Leesburg. Jim Kavanaugh, political analyst and blogger from New York. Thank you. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tahwei and the team, it's goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer.